This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. Wales hold Belgium to become one of the seeded nations in the World Cup qualifying playoffs. There's only one way to mark the moment. Get Ellis James on extended voice note duties. Everything's sorted then in Europe, so we'll look beyond. A bun fight in South America below Brazil and Argentina. And we've been inundated with Canadians who rightly demand some love after forcing the Mexicans to play a football match in a tundra. We'll pay tribute to the former Guardian football correspondent David Lacey. Look ahead to this weekend's Premier League and after National League side Stockport's barnstorming victory over Bolton, we ask, is there simply too much magic in the FA Cup? There's criticism for music snob John Bruin, even more Wikipedia to discuss, and exciting news as the pod officially becomes a family show. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, John Bruin, aforementioned. How are you?
I'm fine, Max. How are you?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. Ben Fisher, what have you got for us today? Anything? Any gold?
Hi, Max. I don't know. I'm feeling a bit undercooked. We'll see. Let's see.
All right. Okay. Well, so it's great. It's good to set expectations low. So, you know, people expect nothing from you today, Ben. Johnny Liu, hello.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, marvellous. Are you expecting to bring anything good to the... I mean, people listening, there's three a week. You know, if no one's got anything good, if everyone's expectations are low, you know, we could just sort of move on to Monday.
There's very much a kind of a third pod of International Week vibe to this, isn't there? No, I mean, I've been covering cricket all week, so you know, I've been covering racism in cricket, so you know, I am well informed, fully briefed, and obviously have my head truly in the game.
Sure, may I say you've been covering it very well, even though this is not where it will be discussed. That article you wrote was really good.
Thanks. Oh, you know what? Can I just give a shout out to myself?
Of course, yeah.
I am currently eighth in the world in fantasy darts.
What?
And fantasy darts. And I don't know. I just feel like it's a massive achievement that people need to know about. So
how many people play fantasy darts? Is it harder to be eighth in fantasy darts than in darts?
No, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to do it. But yeah, I had a big night last night, you know. Johnny Clayton and James Way both won. So I just want to give a shout out to myself for that. Well, it's about 600 players.
Okay, that's good. James Wade once fixed my Renault Clio.
He's good at that, yeah.
Yeah, he was really good at it, yeah. Anyway, let's crack on. Wales won, Belgium won. Wales securing themselves a home playoff semi-final. With that result, Rodri says, sorry for going all Ellis about things, but watching Wales play under Rob Page is a truly, genuinely joyous experience. Since the Euros, we play with attacking wingbacks who score goals in Connor Roberts and Nico Williams. Our midfield has often consisted of Alan Ramsey and Harry Wilson, and we press teams high and play out from the back through Danny Ward and Joe Roden. Every time the game gets to the 85th minute, the whole stadium rises in applause for Gary Speed. I just think that this would be the type of team he would have built. That's all. Cheers. Well, you can go all Ellis James and we can go all Ellis James by beginning this pod with 6 minutes of him being delighted about Wales.
Well, Max. Wales have finished second in a World Cup qualifying group for the first time since 1965, qualifying for the 66 World Cup, of course. It wasn't enough for us to qualify then. It isn't enough for us to qualify now, but still, it is a tremendous achievement to finish second, which means that we are now in the hat for the playoffs, of course, but we are seeded, more importantly, which means that we will be playing at home, which is a tremendous advantage because we have a really good home record. We haven't lost a competitive home game in Cardiff since losing to Denmark 2-1 in the Nations League in November 2018. And prior to that, the last qualifier we lost was another World Cup qualifier. It was against Ireland when we lost 1-0 in 2017 in qualification for the 2018 World Cup, the final game of that qualifying campaign. So this is huge for us. This is absolutely massive. And it also means that certainly in the playoff semi-final, We're avoiding Portugal. We're avoiding Italy. You know, two teams. I can't think of anything worse than going to Rome or Lisbon to play those two teams in a semi-final. But still, that won't happen. It was a great night. It really is like supporting a club side watching Wales now. I've never known anything like it. It's so much better now than when I started going, you know, almost 30 years ago. It's just bliss. It's a golden age. We beat Belarus 5-1 on Saturday night, then drew with Belgium 1-1. Obviously, Belgium had a lot of players out, but, you know, they're still an amazing team. And De Bruyne, I mean, watching him bearing down on your goal, it's just terrifying. So I couldn't be prouder of the players. We did it without Gareth Bale as well. And I didn't really think about him, which is, you know, that obviously bodes very well for the future. Another person who bodes very well for the future. I'm sure that some Liverpool fans might be scornful of this, is Nico Williams, because he was absolutely sublime against Belarus on Saturday night. And he was fantastic again against Belgium. And I can't claim credit for this point. It was Danny Gabaldon who said it on my football podcast. But he's doing all of his development in a Wales shirt. So he scored against Belarus on Saturday night. And he was just a constant threat on Tuesday against Belgium. And, you know, I don't want to put too much pressure on the boy. He's 20 years of age. That's all I want from him, is for him to continue this development and to grow into a world-class superstar who will allow me to live my dreams. So, as I said, I don't want to put too much pressure on him. But another shout out for Joe Roden, who's just colossal in defence. Spurs are really, really missing out by not playing him, because he's proper old school. He just loves to defend. He loves to put in brilliantly timed tackles on world-class strikers and then go, yes, to himself. He does it every time, and it is absolutely adorable. Shout out to Rob Page, who's done so well because, you know, it was between us and the Czechs, really, for second place. So to get second place and to get us seeded as well, it's great. And, you know, he seems to have developed a slightly different formula and shape over the past few games. We press higher up the pitch, we're more positive, especially the threat coming from our wing-backs, Nico Williams in particular. I'm just so pleased. The only slightly irritating thing is that we've come second in the group. And it's not just a single-game playoff. You know, we've got the semi-final. So you've got to get through that and then play another team. I mean, it is particularly hard to qualify for a World Cup. You know, chill out, FIFA. You think that coming second would be enough, but, you know, clearly it isn't. Rob Page was very emotional at the end. The players had a huddle and he had a bit of a cry because he's so proud of the players, and I know how he feels. I just love this group. I just love them so much, and I really want to see us in a World Cup, because it would be so good. But anyway, I'm rambling. One positive, which I'm going to end on, is that the semi-final at home will be played at the Cardiff City Stadium, where we have this great record. It's not going to be moved to the Principality Stadium, which would be such a stupid idea. The FAW have learned from their previous mistakes, because when we played Scotland in that shootout prior to the 86 World Cup in 1985 in Indian Park, the players wanted to play at the racecourse in Wrexham, where they had a very good record, and it was a ground they considered to be very lucky. But because Ninian Park was slightly bigger, the FAW thought of the gate receipts and moved it to Cardiff, going against the wishes of the players and the manager, Mike England. That won't happen this time. Mike England, fact fans, is one of these Spurs players I discuss with very old taxi drivers, because I like old people to like me. Depending on how old they are, it's either Mike England, who played for Spurs in the 60s and 70s, or Cliff Jones, who played for Spurs about 10 years before that, although their careers did overlap. Big fans of them both. Love you, Max.
Thank you, Ellis. I love you too. And who doesn't want old people to like them? Ben, you were there. You said it was a stonking atmosphere on Twitter.
You just felt like Wales were, I don't know, going into it, it just felt like Wales were going to get something. And almost a bit cliche, I suppose, in the sense of under the lights, the kind of atmosphere, all the off-field stuff, nothing really to do with the football. I mean, the pre-match, I mean, the anthem before the game was just ridiculous. Amazing to see. And then the performance kind of followed. I think they, Wales probably could have won the game in the second half. I thought they came on quite strong. Inevitably, they had to survive a couple of, you know, hairy moments. But yeah, really impressive. As Ellis said, Nico Williams was superb from left wing back, Connor Roberts on the other side. Just so much energy, so much thrust. And obviously that was without Bell. And I think they'll fancy their chances, whoever they get in the draw. That hence why it was so important to get a result against Belgium, to get that home draw. I don't think any of those teams will scare them. And credit to Rob Page as well for the job he's done, I think, because he's led the team really impressively. Obviously, it's an awkward situation with no Ryan Giggs. And Rob Page has led the team imperiously, really. And I think, yeah, they've got a really good chance of two steps on the World Cup. You know, it's amazing, and really hope they do it.
Yeah, I mean, they've given it Pagey till the end of the season, John. Isn't it time they just gave it Pagey forever, or at least for the next few years?
I think there's probably a few issues tied up with that. So, but let's pay tribute to Robert Page. Some of us may recall him as a particularly hard defender for Watford and so on. And not known as one of the game's great talkers. In fact, as Ben will know, he still isn't. But he's the strong, silent type, and his Wales team play well. You know, as Ellis said, and as our correspondent who wrote in there before, you know, they play as exciting football as we've seen from Wales, including, you know, back in the Chris Coleman days. I World Cup qualifying for UEFA. I must admit, I dropped the ball a bit on this. Why do they have to beat two teams to get there these days? It all seems quite hard, doesn't it?
It's the arithmetic of getting 55 teams down to 13. Also, I think, you know, they needed to offer a little sop to their kind of the Nations League, which, you know, I think, well, previously it was linked to Euros qualification, and this, you know, the current Nations League was, you know, the two best teams who won their group got a kind of a second chance at World Cup qualification, which, you know, I think, you know, Wales would have qualified either way. So I think it's the Czech Republic and Austria who have kind of made it through the back door in that sense. And I think it's still like a little mini tournament. It's almost a kind of a pre-tournament tournament, which I guess is great for TV ratings. It's great for Jeopardy. And there are some, you know, there were some really, really decent teams. You know, everybody talks about Italy and Portugal, but, you know, the likes of North Macedonia could easily kind of, you know, spring a shock. You know, Wales and Scotland, and we all know what Austria can do. And there are some really, really like good teams who are not going to make it. You know, there's a lot of jeopardy in those final stages, which I guess is what viewers want, and it's what FIFA want.
It sort of does feel unfair, this playoff system. It will be really brilliant. You know, like you've got Portugal, Scotland, Italy, Russia, Sweden and Wales, the seeded teams, Turkey, Poland, North Macedonia, Ukraine, Austria and Czech Republic. And then the three finals played 4 days later after the semi-finals. This will be so brilliant. But like the pain of missing out almost makes it feel unfair on how many teams, the nine teams that won't make it through. It's almost like they should do this, pretend it's all real, and then let them all go to the World Cup.
It's football. I mean, as Wilson was saying the other day on the pod, that, you know, there's a proper penalty now for finishing second in your group. You know, if you didn't want to go through all this, win your group.
So look, the Netherlands went through automatically because they beat Norway 2-0. No one in the stadium because of COVID restrictions in the Netherlands, but that meant Norway dropped out completely. Poor old Lars. Turkey getting into the playoffs. And France's 2-0 win means that Finland miss out completely. Ukraine taking their spot. Denmark have announced that there were messages in support of human rights on their training kit during the World Cup. The national team's commercial partners do not do commercial activities in Qatar unless they are activist and part of a critical dialogue. They'll greatly minimise travel in Qatar, only participate in activities related to sport or where they can contribute politically to improve conditions for migrant workers. Hotels and other services used will be checked rigorously to ensure labour laws are adhered to. Jacob Jensen, Denmark's managing director, said DBU has long been strongly critical of the World Cup in Qatar, but now we're intensifying our efforts and critical dialogue further so that we take advantage of the fact that we are qualified to work for more change in the country. It feels to me, Johnny, like I just don't think I've ever seen anything, I might be wrong, but anything of this, you know, sort of spoken this solidly and this critically of a country going to a major tournament.
No, hugely impressive and absolutely, you know, massive credit to the DBU for taking this step. You know, there will always be people who say, you know, you can do more, boycott it, don't go, you know. And I guess what would happen in that instance is Denmark would not go and some other team would go who aren't going to do any of the things that Denmark are going to do. You know, there is, for all the, you know, the power and fame that footballers and football teams have at a tournament like this, where they're essentially one of 32 nations and not one of the bigger ones, to be fair, what is your leverage? Your leverage is advertising space. You are a promotional vehicle for the tournament. You are advertising space for the organisers. And the most powerful thing realistically you can do is to take away that advertising space, to use that platform and to use that kind of promotional clout to not make the world worse. I think that's what's incumbent on all of us as citizens. Just, you know, you don't have to, you know, lie down in front of a tank, but you can strive to not make the world worse. And I think that's what they've really thought about doing. And I really hope other countries take a few tips from how Denmark have handled this.
Without kind of being patronising about it, I suppose, it's really impressive and quite powerful, I think, to see and hear footballers finding their voice on these issues. We've had, I suppose, different big issues in the last 18 months and different players. You know, Rashford sort of springs to mind, all of his work, Jordan Henderson. But on Qatar and human rights, I think it's really, just really quite powerful. I think it encourages other people to step forward. And like Johnny says, I hope... we've heard obviously Cody's words from the England camp, and I hope England do have that chat and it does come to something meaningful. Obviously Norway won't be there, but I had a chat with Mohamed Al-Yunusi a couple of weeks ago, Southampton winger, and he just really amazed me with what he said. He said he wouldn't boycott it. I asked him, I said, would you, in the event if he got there, I said, would you feel uncomfortable and uneasy about playing there? And he just said, and he sort of thought about it, he said, no. And he said, I think it would send the wrong message to boycott it, and actually it'd be better to take action there and make a stand there. And I think these guys are, you know, they're not just saying it. It's not just sound bites. You know, they've really thought about this. And obviously Denmark, again, I think have spoken at length as a group. I know Norway have. And I just think it's really good of football. I know it's quite early days and the tournament's still, you know, months away, but I think it's certainly going in the right direction.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see what and if other nations do anything off the back of it. Right, that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll round up CONMEBOL and CONCACAF. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. There's a live show on November the 30th. 7:30 p.m. I think it's 7:30. Live streamed into your home. Me, Barry, Lars and Wilson. You can get your tickets at theguardian.com/guardianlive. We are almost in negotiations with a prominent footballer for a big halftime show. As yet unconfirmed. Very unlikely to be confirmed. But watch this space. Come along. And if you can't watch it live, you can watch it anytime in the next week. And people are saying you can't do a Christmas show in November. I'll be in December when it's on. So that, and no, I won't be drinking, but the others probably will be. Let's look at World Cup qualifying around the world. South America, Argentina qualified. after a 0-0 draw with Brazil. So they're both in. Ecuador have probably made it. Complete bun fight for the last automatic place and the playoff place between Colombia, Peru, Chile, Uruguay, Bolivia, and I think possibly Paraguay as well. You know, so as always with South American qualifying, some big sides won't make it. Uruguay certainly in danger, and elsewhere.
Should we just let them all? Should we just let them all go? Because well, it would be heartbreaking for them not to go to the World Cup. Just let them all go.
So, yeah. Yeah. Just remember, right? How old are you? You're not quite old enough. Remember how hard it was before 94, Johnny. Like, just remember how bad it was. You know, and it's a horrible thing not to qualify.
There were fewer countries back then, weren't there?
Yeah. No, you're right. But it, you know.
Thanks to dictatorships.
Anyway, no, you're right. There should be qualification. Otherwise, the whole thing would be a farce, wouldn't it? A huge Canadian contingent have been clamoring for coverage. So many emails and tweets about this game. We might have to add Toronto to the as yet unconfirmed world tour that we're planning in the next year or so. PYL, if you don't talk about the Ice Tekka, we will politely riot. Kelly, you guys better talk about Canada being top of CONCACAF and the epic... Celles, is it? Celles, Celles, in Estadia Ice Tekka, a long-time listener from Edmonton, Alberta. Now, I mean, Canada is, I suspect, not an area. I don't know who I'm staring at the three of you, hoping that one of you can just furnish me with something about the Canada team, which is beyond Frank Yallop, Craig Forrest, and Carlo Corazin, which is kind of where I got to. I mean, it looked very cold there. And they've scored a phenomenal amount of goals. Johnny.
Yeah, I mean, this is, they're calling this Canada's golden generation, aren't they? Well, some people are. I mean, but you know, in Canada, there's a huge amount of excitement about this generation. You know, obviously everyone knows about Alphonso Davies, but, you know, the likes of Jonathan David at Lille, you know, they're like really good young players who are making, you know, making waves in European leagues. The issue with CONCACAF is that because, like, traditionally it's been so dominated by the US and Mexico. Those are kind of your bellwether teams, and Mexico, you know, they're not playing that well at the moment. And as a result of that, it's kind of really hard to get a gauge on how good genuinely any of these other teams are. I think it's, you know, basically it's 4-3, right? I think Panama and kind of the three 2026 World Cup hosts are in the running. And, you know, there's a huge amount of hype about Canada, huge amount of hype always about the US MNT. But because of this, like, this the really mixed standard of that group of countries at the moment, it's kind of hard to get a gauge on how good they are or how well they'll do on a bigger stage, which, you know, so obviously I don't watch a huge amount of Canada, and I defer to people who have, but I think you know, you would need to see them tested against much bigger nations before you kind of made a conclusion on how good this side actually is.
So in other words, we will really wait to review Canada until mid-November 2022. That's when, if the Canadians keep listening, until then.
Well, I've always found this idea of kind of previewing, you know, predicting football. It's like a, you know, people say it's a mug's game. It is, but it is. Yeah. It really is. Like, everyone's made predictions that look really stupid. And, you know, a lot of the times, you know, you get asked to preview some game or how is this player going to do this? Wait and see. There's literally so much, you know, the football always arrives and we will always find out at the end. It's not like, you know, we're going to be kept waiting on tenterhooks, but we will find out. You know, be patient.
Do you think that basically The Guardian should release one sport football section a year and we should release one pod after it's all happened where we can review it?
Yeah, I mean, but that's the paradox. The paradox is that looking forward to football is far better and far more exciting than talking about football that's already happened. Generally speaking, as a fan, like, you anticipate the game more, you know, in the morning than, you know, than you feel about it in the evening after it's happened. But you know, the paradox is that that's when you know least about it. I mean, I'm not saying anything like massively controversial here, but you know, that's the paradox of football, right? The time when you're most excited about it and want to talk about it is the time when you know least about it.
I don't know. I think sometimes like the post, if the game has been amazing, like I'm thinking, John, like that 3 days where Man City won with that Vincent Kompany goal, then Liverpool beat Barcelona and then Spurs beat Ajax. There were sort of times afterwards where I was so breathless and so kind of, you know, I wanted to talk about it. So, I mean, I couldn't really express it in words. But I think there is. I'm not just fighting because I, you know, it's important professionally. But
yeah, and I think our listeners in Canada are probably in that moment, aren't they, of looking back on that game, wondering how on earth they're going to be able to import an ice storm into Qatar to win group games should they get there. A friend of mine, a colleague of mine, Chris Jones, a former colleague of mine. He's been banging the drum for Canadian football, talking about how it was such a minority affair for so long, and how he felt that there weren't that many true believers, and yet it looks like they will be there for the first time since 1986. Now, I am old enough to remember Canada in 1986, pre-Paul Pescasolido, the other Canadian player that everyone mentions.
Are they the two stages of Canadian football, pre and post?
Sort of. Mexico 86, when Jean-Pierre Papin missed a hatful of chances against them. Paul Pescasolido not having Owen Hargreaves play for them, and now in 2021 looking like they're going to qualify for the World Cup. That's the...
Was Thomas Radzinski?
Yes, he was. Yeah.
I'm currently sat on his Wikipedia page.
Have you bought it as a non-fungible token? Yeah. Is that it? You're sitting on it because you now own it.
A valuable item. Yeah.
Legend of the game.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, John.
No. So, I mean, you know, I joke there, but there's a sort of, you know, bluffers, idiots guide to Canadian football, which, you know, all these years has had to stare down on the, and you know, as Jonathan referred to, the hype over the US MNT just over the border there is huge, and the audience is huge for the United States soccer team. Maybe Canada's about to appear to experience something similar, and that would be that would be very exciting. They've bided the time, and there's those group of young players. What are our memories of that game? Well, the player diving into the snow to celebrate. That's up there, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that wasn't the greatest sort of gif-able moment of the CONCACAF games, because Mikel Antonio scored an absolutely brilliant goal for Jamaica in their 1-1 draw with the US. And then a man called Lamar Walker tried to do the, you know, Alan Partridge, it's a goal, and another one, you know, boot into the net. And just absolutely, just he just didn't connect at all, and then just sort of fell on his backside, and then was sort of on the floor when everyone else was celebrating with Antonio. But it was some strike. And then someone went onto Twitter to create a 2-minute video of people missing when trying to blast in a rebound, which is exactly what the internet should be for. The World Cup qualifiers taking place in North America, South America and Asia around the weekend of the end of January. That'll be the latter stages of the African Cup of Nations as well. No Premier League games scheduled for that weekend. No UEFA fixtures. Sort of seems to be some kind of hidden winter break in the Premier League.
It's sort of guaranteed to boil Jurgen Klopp's urine, essentially, that one, isn't it? Yeah, this international one. He can stop worrying about international football until March, he thought, and then he looks at the calendar.
Absolutely right. Now, David Lacey, the Guardian football correspondent, has died at the age of 83. Sean Ingle writing a fixture in the pages of the Guardian in 5 decades. He wrote his first match report for the paper in November 1964, covered 10 World Cups, kept writing on football until 2013. Richard Williams saying, although never a showy writer, Lacey was held in special esteem and affection by peers and rivals who recognised his blend of wit, craftsmanship and knowledge of the game. The quality and integrity of his work allowed him to stand aloof from the frantic chase for a scoop, while a somewhat gruff manner failed to disguise a nature that made him excellent company for colleagues on long trips and abroad. At Heysel and Hillsborough, he witnessed events that scarred English football for a generation. The latter reminded him of reading during his own boyhood accounts of a similar tragedy at Bolton when 33 were killed in the crush at a 1946 Cup quarter-final. The worst tragedy in British sport, he concluded, as the Liverpool death toll rose, had also been the most avoidable. No one should have to die in order to see Peter Beardsley hit the bar. The capacity for human error and faulty judgments in a crisis is undiminished. Hillsborough has proved that. He was slightly before my time, but having read sort of today a number of sort of brilliant reports that he's done, and that lovely, and an economy of language, which I think was sort of pretty impressive, John.
Well, yeah, you know, I've been a Guardian reader for a long time, and when David Lacey stepped aside after the 2002 World Cup, it felt almost unimaginable that he wouldn't be doing the bigger matches. Yeah, I suppose it is that economy of style. And it's a style, I suggest, much imitated, rarely bettered. As Richard Williams hinted, that, you know, there are several types of football journalists, believe it or not, and David Lacey would not be the type that hunted for scoops and quotes. He relied upon his writing, and he left quite a legacy. And as I say, long-time reader of his work, and of course he used to do a column, I think, on a Saturday for The Guardian, which was always very enjoyable, in which he cast current events, you know, back through the prism of the football history he'd lived through. So, a sad loss.
And interesting to, I mean, it's obvious when you think about it, but, you know, back in the day was, you know, phoning match reports in because, you know, there's no laptop, there's no internet, there's no, you know, things that just make it much more difficult. And also, you know, at a time when there was much less football on the TV, right? So, arguably performing a more important, not necessarily important role, but a different role.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of he sort of represented the golden age of the match report. He didn't really do interviews. He didn't have to do kind of five things we learned from the game afterwards. he didn't have to file kind of, you know, hot takes, he didn't have to tweet several times a day. And you know, that for that generation of so many writers I respect just really looked up to Lacey as kind of like their, you know, their the alpha of of intelligent football writing, but never really kind of like took himself too serious or took the game too seriously. And you know, that's I think, you know, one of the hallmarks of, you know, what people call like the golden age of British sports writing, you know, the 60s and 70s. I mean, a lot of it I find quite just so overwrought and you know, full of pathos, certainly, but often at times when they didn't need to be. And, having read Lacey's work from the archive, I ended up reading quite a lot during this summer's Euros, you know, going back through his writing from Euro 96. There's just this incredible lightness to it. This idea that football is meant to be enjoyed, and you know, you see that in the references, kind of the cultural references that he brought in, the jokes that he sometimes made. But it, you know, it is ultimately something that is there to be enjoyed, and I think a lot of writers forget that these days, and always have done, actually.
Obviously, we send our best to his friends and family, and that'll do for part two. Just before we go into part three, we're going to be recording a special episode on what it's like to be a woman at football. The idea for the episode was sparked by a listener, Sarah, who wrote to us regarding our coverage of the signing of Cristiano Ronaldo at Manchester United and imploring us to have a more in-depth conversation around a woman's experience watching the game, especially with the recent announcement of research by the FSA that revealed 1 in 5 women reported unwanted physical attention at football matches. We're going to be speaking to Sarah for this episode. We'd love to hear from as many listeners as possible. Your experiences whether it's at the game, at the pub, travelling to and from matches, sort of any part of the experience, really. We'll be able to keep people anonymous if you wish. We won't use any of your experiences without getting your permission beforehand. There'll be a link to where you can send us any experiences you've had on the Guardian website. We'll tweet it out as well. We'll be collecting your stories for the next week or so. We know we have a mostly male audience, so we would really love to hear from female listeners wherever you are in the world. We'll be back in a second. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. The Premier League have confirmed that Chairman Gary Hoffman has resigned. Hoffman will step down at the end of January. He said it has been a privilege to lead the Premier League through the last two seasons when the spirit of English football has been more important than ever. Now I've decided the time is right for me to stand aside to allow new leadership to steer the league through its next exciting phase. The Premier League statement added, it's a bit like a Premier League club when they get rid of a manager. The Premier League is grateful to Gary for his committed service. He's led the league during the most challenging period in its history, leaves it in a stronger position than ever. They didn't say, you know, he's always welcome back at the club. Hoffman was appointed in April 2020. Clubs in the Premier League were angry, still are a bit, over the way the Newcastle takeover was approved. Clubs complained they'd not been properly consulted over a decision to allow PIF, the Sovereign Saudi Wealth Fund, to buy the club, having been notified by email only after reports have been published in the media. John, that, do we think that's the nub of it? I mean, we don't. I guess we can't be certain.
No, but that appears to be the wide suggestion that's not being particularly rebuffed, isn't it? That it's to do with the Saudi Arabia buyout of Newcastle and also the Super League thing. That little statement in which it says he leaves the Premier League in a stronger position than ever. Do we really think that's the case? I mean, I don't think the Premier League is under any threat or anything like that. But I'd suggest that Richard Scudamore, who's obviously a different role, might suggest he left it in a stronger position. And the thing to say is that this isn't Richard Masters, the chief executive or whatever, walking away. This is a chairman in a non-executive role. And it does appear as if this is some form of sacrificial victim from the other clubs not being too happy that the Newcastle deal was going to go through. And we've seen all types of behind closed doors machinations with that, haven't we? With the sort of changing of the rules and stuff like that, which Newcastle fans are not happy about. Obviously, but there does appear to be a bit of horse bolting going on, you know, the closing the stable door, and out of that stable door goes Gary Hoffman. Good luck to the next man. I'm not sure we're going to name a stand after Gary Hoffman, are we?
Not be good if in the Premier League rules, if one Hoff leaves, you have to replace him with another Hoff, and therefore David Hasselhoff becomes the next chairman of the Premier League.
Susanna Hoffs of the Bengals. That would be nice, wouldn't
it? They have to retire his employee number. Yeah. We've retired Gary's little picture of a corner flag, club statement. You know, we've
retired his leather chair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Derby County and Reading have both had points deductions, Ben. Poor old Derby County. A further 9 points after admitting breaches to the EFL's profitability and sustainability rules over the £81 million sale of Pride Park to their former owner, Mel Morris. 21-point deduction now. The club's administrators confirmed on Tuesday they've agreed the deduction, plus a further suspended 3 points. Their appeal against a 12-point deduction has been dismissed for entering administration. It leaves them on minus 3 points, 18 points adrift of safety. It's just so depressing what's happened there, isn't it, Ben?
Yeah, and it feels like, you know, it's virtually done, isn't it? I think in terms of them playing League One football next year, it's going to take quite literally a miracle. And Rooney had always maintained that while it was 12 points for the administration, he felt maybe a tad optimistically, but you could kind of see where he was coming from, that they could maybe turn it around. But the further 9 points for breaching essentially the financial rules. It's just too much to overcome. And it's not a good look for the Championship, really, all round, because obviously with Reading as well, falling foul of the same rules. Reading, oddly, have signed Andy Carroll this week on a short-term deal.
which I did try to find out yesterday, but didn't really get too far. But I'm presuming it must be a pay-as-you-play deal, which seems too good to be true otherwise. And oddly, it's till like mid-January. It's not even to the end of the month. So I don't know if he's hoping to get, you know, just this great patch of form and then land a big move towards the end of January. Who knows? But yeah, not great either for Reading, who are quite a weird club, really, in terms of just they feel like they've lost their way very badly. The figures from a couple of years ago in terms of the wage bill, I think it was 194% of their turnover, which was by some distance the highest in the league.
I mean, that's batshit, isn't it? That's totally ridiculous.
It's just gone so wayward, so wrong. And it feels quite, you know, basic to, you know, to see from the outside looking in. It's just like, what are you doing? But then I suppose you could say the same for Derby and essentially how they got into this mess, gambling essentially with, you know, to get to the Premier League and then just, you know, trying to pull a fast one basically with the stadium, Mel Morrison in that case. Yeah, and it's not good really for the league. And then, yeah, it does leave you wondering, you know, kind of that who will be next kind of fear. And I think for Derby and Rooney, it's just going to be a horrible few. You know, it's quite a long way to go still. It's just going to be a horrible season all round. I mean, it was anyway, wasn't it? But the administrators, I think, are hopeful of something happening. Not sort of imminently, but I think they're hopeful of finding a buyer. But, you know, they would say that, let's be honest. So, yeah, not a good time for either of those clubs, really. Reading this morning cheerily tweeted, a new morning, a fresh start, lessons will be learned. Now is the time to come together. Which, you know, if that isn't heartening, I don't know what is.
It's just amazing. It's amazing when clubs tweet out, you know, didn't like, you know, Man United tweeted, you know, before, after, like with Harry Maguire's goal. And you'll think that, like, sort of read the room. Like, Reading fans are not sitting there this morning with a 6-point deduction for basically, you know, blowing so much money on wages going, right, here we go, you know. Still 0-0, lads. Oh, you know, it's -6-0, isn't it? It's like, just sort of stay quiet.
Let's win the second half here, shall we? Even though we're 5-0 down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's win the second financial quarter. still 0-0 in our balance sheet.
Yeah. Get the P&L going. Yeah.
the scary thing about Derby is that nobody really knows how bad it could get for them. I think the administrators have to provide some kind of financial statement at some point in the next like couple of months, which you know could lay bare how bad the finances even are, and then you know I think there's some you know there are various takeover bids in progress, but that has dragged on so long now that it's really a question of what's the point of, you know, Wayne Rooney, who's basically been keeping them afloat and is still the one, you know, with the power to attract the caliber of players who could keep them up. At what point does he say, you know, this is a lost cause now? I've really poured my heart and soul into this, and you know, I'm going to walk away from this with you know some kind of credibility intact. At which point, you know, if there's no takeover in prospect, you're 21 points down, you're playing League One next season, there's an exodus of players, nobody knows how bad the balance sheet is. Like, that's a club, I mean, we've talked about Derby being in free fall for some months now, but they could have some distance still to travel.
Other EFL things to note, Barnsley have a new head coach, Ben. Tell me all about Poya Asbaghi.
Yeah, I'm glad you went to do the pronunciation, not me.
I do hope I pronounced that correctly.
I don't know loads about him, but interesting backstory, I suppose, in the sense that he fled Iran as a toddler, I believe, and grew up in Sweden. Barnsley actually interviewed him before they appointed Gerhard Struber, who, you know, let's remember, was quite a big success there at Oakwell. Obviously, Valerian Ismail was an even bigger hit. Hasn't worked with Marcus Schopp. I don't think the players were really having him convinced. Obviously, didn't work on the pitch.
Was his manager note in the programme called Talking Shop?
I hope so. I don't know.
Thank you for furnishing that with a small laugh, Ben. I appreciate it.
Nobody else did they? I mean,
I thought it was okay.
Okay, thanks so much. Carry on, dude.
Yeah, and this is a manager who built his reputation in Sweden. Under 21s manager, he was in Dublin on Tuesday, I believe, with the 21s. And yeah, I don't think he's actually going to take the game this weekend, but as of next week, he'll be in. And yeah, it's a big, you know, big task. They're having a totally different season to last year in the relegation zone. It's a very sort of Barnsley move, if you like. You know, they've gone for this profile of manager that fits their sort of philosophy, if you like, to that buzzword. Let's hope it comes off for him.
Did anyone do the Barnsley shop gag, or is that?
I thought that was a headline somewhere.
Yeah, that's got to have been done, hasn't it? Barnsley shop. Come on.
What is a Barnsley shop?
I think it's a chop of meat. I think it might be pork.
A Barnsley chop.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay.
It's one of those dishes that if you go to the sort of gastro pubs who are sort of doing stuff traditionally, you might see a Barnsley chop down there.
Sounds like a two-star skill move on FIFA, the Barnsley chop.
Producer Joel says, this bit might be chopped, he says.
Very good.
But now he's been name-checked, it'll almost certainly stay. Now, the FA are investigating whether Exeter City used too many substitutes during their FA Cup win on Tuesday. They won 3-0 in extra time, changed five players during the 90 minutes, then brought another player on at the start of extra time. Under the rules, you can bring on five during the game, including extra time, with a sixth allowed for a concussion. A review is taking place, they say, following the match. I think, fair enough, you're going to make me... When you've done five, there's just so many, you're just going to make... they've got Cambridge in the next round, so actually I'd be quite happy if they weren't allowed through, but I forgive them. Absolute scenes at Edgeley Park, John. In many ways, the game had too much, didn't it? Bolton two up after, 5 minutes? Lost 4-2 in extra time. When the fourth went in, there was a pitch invasion. Cue Martin Keown saying, we don't want to see these scenes. Brackets, everyone else does want to see these scenes. The goal scorer throwing his shirt into the crowd. He couldn't find the shirt, so he had to put on one probably from the club shop. They lost a corner flag. So that's I don't know if they found the corner flag or they stuck
it. Yeah, they found that.
They found the corner flag and then they stuck it in the ground and then it fell over, so the ref just thought, sod it, and blew for full time. But it was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was less a corner flag than a gatepost. If you slid into that,
Vardy would have broken his leg.
hunting down the fullback, pressing high up the pitch, you might have run into trouble there. A long time ago, I used to be a regular visitor to Edgeley Park. I don't even want to tell you how long ago it was. Yes, it was 30 years. They used to play on Friday nights, a bit like Tranmere. I haven't been since that time. And it was a Proustian rush to see the old place, which hasn't changed that much, it has to be said, since the 90s, when they did have that flurry of success. I remember them beating Manchester City in the old Championship or Division 1, as it would be then. A great night there. As Ben will know, and I'm sure Jonathan knows too, they Stockport are pretty well funded down in the National League. The sight of Paddy Madden, who I think is a pretty decent player at sort of a higher level than that, playing for them, they've got money, and they are ambitious, and they've had a tough time, the fans, and it was great to see. And we are reminded once again that if there is magic in the FA Cup, then it lies in those early rounds most of the time, doesn't it?
Now, Premier League this weekend, Liverpool, Arsenal, Spurs, Leeds, Conte's first home Premier League game. We can't preview it because, as Johnny suggested, even though we're excited about the anticipation.
No, it's not interesting. It's not
nothing
interesting
to say about it. Adam says, hi, Max and all the team. Max, as an Englishman in Australia, I'm strangely thrilled to have you in this country. Feels like we won the transfer window on that one. Thanks, very kind of you. Recently, I've got access to the Premier League and made a concerted effort to get my 14 and 11-year-old daughters and my 8-year-old son into English football. I encouraged them to pick a Premier League club to follow, mainly so they weren't lumbered with being a Forest fan like their dad. I also recently told my 14-year-old Evie about the pod. I think I even muttered the words football education in relation to your Excellent podcast, he says. Just the other week, as I walked past her room, I heard the latest pod blaring out while she was doing a workout. She's a swimmer. She now listens to the pod religiously. I can only liken the joy this gives me to when you introduce two of your best friends and then see them getting on famously over a beer or two. It truly is lump in the throat wonderful to see her getting into the pod. Is that a bit sad? That's wonderful. I wanted to share with you, as it seems you may have a burgeoning following among the younger generation. Maybe it's because of Barry. I don't know. Keep up the good work. I, like many others who've written in, rely on you and the panel more than you could know. All the best, Adam. It does make me wonder if, I mean, I suppose for 14-year-olds, swearing is fine, but I worry with a younger family audience, do we need to sort of do a PG?
For a 14-year-old Australian, swearing's pretty much...
That's de rigueur, is it? That's all they do.
Passé, almost.
Chris says, not a question, but can you tell Hipster John... hello, Evie, by the way. You know, welcome to the family.
Yes.
Chris says, not a question. Can you tell Hipster John I made a point to listen to his proclaimed best song ever written, number one song in heaven by the Sparks... By Just Sparks, is it?
The Sparks, yeah. Who are you, Tony Blackburn? You know, but...
He says, anyway, it was the musical equivalent of Baz's Munich train adventure. A 7 minutes, 27 seconds. It probably lasted longer too, John.
Well, me and Chris have had this out on Twitter.
Oh, really? Okay.
And we've agreed to disagree on this one, though he has no taste, obviously. Okay. But, you know, listen, you can't win these arguments. I don't know. He's denying the brilliance of Giorgio Moroder and the two brothers in Sparks. Critics across the world would scoff at that. That's all I can say.
All right. Liam says on Wikipedia, more on Wikipedia, he says, I am the New Jersey residing sumo enthusiast who edited Barry's Wikipedia entry to remove all the anecdotes added by my fellow Football Weekly listener. After hearing you read out Barry's entry, I went to the article and discovered there was rather too much about water pistols, HGV drivers, farmyard gates, rugs and orangutans with swords, and nothing at all on perhaps more important details such as his previous life as a stand-up comic. I'm just trying to restore some balance. Cheers,
Hang
Liam.
On. Well, Barry has a Wikipedia page.
Oh, yeah. And it was
haven't
until...
you got one?
I think so, but I don't really think we should be having Wikipedia pages. Wikipedia, it's an encyclopedia. It should be for things like, you know, the Second World War should have a Wikipedia page. Carbon should have a Wikipedia page. the human genome.
Yeah, yours is quite long, actually. You know, it's got all your awards as a student, and you know, it's got your, it's got your personal life. It doesn't have any. It just has your countdown success. Becoming an octo champ. So she's shortlisted for Writer of the Year at the FSAs, which you are currently. Voting is finished, but you know, got a good chance.
Oh yeah, if you win, yeah. can I get your award?
Or if the pod wins? If the pod wins.
Yeah, if the pod wins.
Well, you want to go up and collect it, sure.
Well, I'm gonna be there, so can I get it?
Yeah. Hop on stage.
Right, unless Barry's gonna be there.
Barry's gonna be there, but you know, like the more the merrier, you know.
Okay.
But let's not count our chickens. There's some good competition there, you know. And remember, if we don't win, we're not doing the pod anymore. But my Wikipedia has been amended in the last couple of days. It now says, in 2021, Rushton signed with Australian UEFA competitions broadcaster Stan Sport to host their football coverage, relocating to Australia with his spouse, Steve Claridge. So there we are. Steve and I are very happy. And that sort of feels like a good place to end the pod. Thank you so much for your time, John.
Thank you, Max. A pleasure.
Thank you, Johnny.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks.
Thank you, Ben. Ben, no car park stories just before we...
No, I'm just thinking I can only dream of a Wikipedia page. I mean, that's the dream.
Seems like everyone gets one.
Forget the car parks. I mean, Wikipedia is where it's at.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We'll be back. We'll be looking back, unfortunately, at the Premier League on Monday.
This is The Guardian.